and intellectual anchor for that organization, even across generational lines. And it was, you know, it was a major contribution to the Black Freedom Movement and to the larger struggle for progressive change in this country. She did many other things too. I could go on and on, but I think her contribution to SNCC was really quite significant.
What lessons could President Obama learn by reading these biographies, Barbara Ransby, of two political activists, of Ella Baker and Islanda Essie Robeson?
Well, you know, when you ask that question, we assume that some of the policies that President Obama has implemented that many of us on the left would disagree with are out of lack of awareness. I don't think they are, actually. I think he knows the history of Ella Baker, and I'm sure he knows the history of Paul Robeson, if not Islanda Robeson. I think the lessons for the rest of us are really to invest in the kind of networking, relationship building, and solidarity work that defined Islanda Robeson's career, that is not going to be the heads of state who are going to forge a different vision of the world, but rather people who, you know, are building organizations and are stretching and making global connections independent of the nation states where our citizenship lies. So I think in terms of Ella Baker's lessons, her lessons are also about building grassroots movements and not placing so much emphasis and faith and hope in a single charismatic leader. And I think many people have looked to Barack Obama as a savior. The first Black president spoke out against the war with us back when it was, you know, in the Iraqi war, and is now, of course, carrying out targeted assassinations and drone attacks. And, you know, it breaks my heart. But I don't think it's for the absence of historical knowledge. And I do hope in this second term we will see much of the knowledge and insight that I think Obama has about history and about, you know, what it means to try to stand on the right side of history, even when it's difficult. I hope that will come to the fore.
Barbara Ransby, author of the new book, Islanda, The Large and Unconventional Life of Mrs. Paul Robeson. She's professor at the University of Illinois. Her past books include the award-winning Ella Baker and the Black Freedom Movement, A Radical Democratic Vision. And that does it for today's broadcast. If you'd like to get a copy of today's show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. We will cover President Obama's State of the Union address tomorrow on Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosta, Nemo Allen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, Christian Goff, and Vesta Godars, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Krug Meadows, Carlo DeJesus. This is our broadcast, Democracy Now! If you'd like to see other interviews and transcripts of today's show, as well as every other show, as well as our Hot Sots, a new program we have at Democracy Now!, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB concert billboard for Wednesday, February 13th. Mariatsu will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m. The Plaza Songwriter Series welcomes Robert Brewey, Sam Rea, and Brendan Monahan at Art Space in Patchogue, 7 p.m. The Backroads Trio will be at the Maribel Tavern at the Three Village Inn. Jason Crosby with Joe Russo, Hager Benari, and Scott Metzer will be at the Living Room in Manhattan. 7 p.m. Rattlesnake Dawn will be at the Nutty Irishman in Bayshore. Your concert billboard for Thursday, February 14th. Freddie Jackson will be at B.B. King's Manhattan. Straight No Chaser will be at the Beacon Theater. Ahmad Ali's Thursday Jazz Dinner will be at Page at 63 Main, Sag Harbor. Frank Latour and Kerry Carney Valentine concert will be at the Vale Levitt Music Hall in Riverhead, 8 p.m. Tang and Deep Rising will be at 89 North in Patchogue, 7 p.m. From huge arenas to intimate coffee houses, you'll hear who's performing inside them on WUSB's concert billboard, both on air and online at WUSB.FM/CBB.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:01, time once again for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined by Kyle.
Bonne nuit.
What a week this has been. What an incredible week. We were hit with a, I don't want to say mega blizzard. It was pretty big, though. Bigger than anything you've ever seen. I think bigger than anything I've ever seen. In recent memory, anyway.
A hearty flurry.
Yeah, I'll say. The thing is, people in New York City, they don't get this because they didn't really get hit very hard at all. They're saying, blizzard, what blizzard? We only got maybe 10 inches of snow max. We got something like 3 feet of snow out here. We don't have it anymore. A lot of it's melted, but the roads are still kind of messed up a little bit. And this all started on, it kind of started Thursday night, but into Friday was when it really started to hit. And it came a lot earlier than people were expecting. They thought it would happen overnight, Friday into Saturday, and a lot of it happened early Friday evening. And that resulted in a lot of people being stranded on the way home from New York City or various other points where they might be working. People were stuck in their cars for, I think, 12 hours in many places. There's videos of entire highways just littered with cars, including cop cars and plows and fire trucks even. Basically, Saturday, really couldn't get anywhere. We were exploring, seeing how crazy it was. And it was pretty crazy. Really couldn't get around. Snow plows were having a very difficult time of it. Sunday even was not possible to drive safely. We didn't get out till Monday, and even then that was a challenge, and things were melting. And today wasn't so bad. Today fortunately we still have the Tercel, you know, the 1993 Tercel that's able to simply plow through anything without getting stuck. And it's a good thing. You know, I've got a new car now. I didn't want to put it through something like this. So I held on to the Tercel, hoping that if something like this were to happen, it would have enough power to simply get us around. And it came through. It even took a hit from a plow. Somebody plowed into the side of it. And, you know, I'm laughing about it because it doesn't matter. The car is over 20 years old now and not long for this world. So, okay, I got another dent on it. It's just, another battle scar.
Yeah.
So, we had some fun. We lost power for about, 2 days?
Yes.
It's different than losing power during a hurricane when things are generally warmer, for the most part. It was not warm. It was quite cold. In fact, at one point, it was approaching something like 10 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 12 or so, minus 13 Celsius. And inside the house, it was getting into the 30s, which was not really optimal, and we were able to figure out ways to make the time go by and stay warm and things like that. It was creative, and it worked.
Yeah, it's amazing how when you lose power, your priorities shift, and how dependent we are on that kind of modern amenity to provide heat. We're not geared up to heat ourselves without electricity, so when something like this happens, you have to shift, you have to create heat in other ways and do a lot of other things, but it came down to heat. I mean, if we had gone any longer without power, I think it would have become a lot more dire situation for us personally and for a lot of other people, I'm sure.
It was interesting because, you know, you're able to figure out ways to stay warm, and yeah, the house is very cold, but you have sleeping bags, you've got blankets, you've got all kinds of layers of clothing, and it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, it starts to get comfortable.
Mm-hmm, at some points I was saying, you know, I'm more comfortable now than I've been in a while.
I mean, it's relative.
And your expectations change, as you say.
Comfortable for that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No internet. Well, actually, no, we did have internet because
that was cool.
You figured out a way. We have UPSs that are supposed to keep things running for a while, but never long enough, maybe 20 minutes, a half hour. But you figured a way to simply turn off one of the UPSs that wasn't doing anything. And moving the Wi-Fi to be directly powered off that UPS. The cable, we still had cable modem. So we simply had everything power up for a few minutes at a time. Maybe an hour at a time.
Yep.
And we were able to stay online even though we had no power and communicate with people that way. That was cool.
Those UPSs only last a really long time if you have a very slight load on them. The reason they only last for like 20 minutes is because in our offices and stuff, the the equipment. There's a lot of equipment that needs to be properly taken care of in a no power situation. But when you do carefully shut everything down, if you get to it quick enough, you can still get a good half a charge on these large UPSs. And when you get it that low, you can then add very low wattage devices. And I'm sure we were probably pulling less than, I don't know, 60 watts or so, about as much as a light bulb. But that allowed us to power the broadband, a small router, and Wi-Fi setup. And
we had laptops, and they were independent, obviously.
They had charged. You are very wise, fresh from the Sandy experience, to have reminded me to charge my laptop up and be prepared. And
I get credited for wisdom for the most inane things. Yeah, it's wise to say charge your laptop before possible power failure. But yeah, okay, I'll take credit for that. that was me. I give out handy advice like that.
Well, whatever, you said it. I don't know, maybe it was automatic response or something
like that.
I think muscle memory, but whatever, I'm fine. There's no credit at all, but
I'll
think
it
was
I need
you
the
that
credit.
Made your
give
mouth
me the credit.
Made those sound, I'll, make those sounds.
I'll take the credit. I will. And I other things too. I've said stay out of the cold and bundle up and things like that. And yeah, we survived and we did well. Some things didn't do so well, and it's the same old thing that we've talked about many other times. We talked to some neighbors that, they couldn't stay on the phone because they had cable phones on broadband and needed power. They had Fios. Yeah, you have Fios through Verizon. You need power for that.
Right.
And you lose power, you lose your phone. We had a landline the whole time. Not a problem.
Apparently the Fios modems have a battery in them, but it's like 4 hours, and that's just standby time. That's whether it's on or off.
Oh, that's the standby time. Wow.
Or 4 or 6 hours. And then I guess there's this emergency button where you can like panic and you get another hour on top of that.
Where does that hour come from?
I have no idea. But
they send you an hour over the phone lines?
It sounds so ridiculous. And I've seen the inside of these Fios things, and there is a battery in there and stuff like that, but it was sort of funny to like hear that because it's not like a broadband modem. I'm not saying broadband modems would be better in this situation or whatever, but I find it hard to believe if the battery's already installed and it's on the side of your house, how are you going to plug in a power cord that you're running off a different battery if you have to run it all the way outside? And perhaps the Fios modem design doesn't even have an external power port, so you wouldn't have been able to do kind of what we were doing, given that it might be on the side of your house and that it may not have any sort of external power input. So we were really at an advantage, and it's kind of funny to hear about that because everybody thinks they're like hot shot with their new fancy broadband, but it doesn't do anything when inclement situations come up.
You know, I don't want to be a Luddite. I'm accused of that sometimes. I'm accused of all kinds of things, but you know, embrace the old technology as well as the new technology because they're both good. I'm not saying don't embrace things like Fios or broadband connectivity and all that. Yeah, it's great. But hold on to something from the past because it does fail, and it's good to have a backup of some sort. I've always said this. Always said have backups no matter what you use. And the landline is the most basic of all backups, and it's also one of the cheapest of all backups. Getting rid of a landline is a foolish move in my eyes because it's always up. It's always there, and you need that that means of communication. During Sandy, all the cell towers went down, so there was no way to communicate via a cell phone. People's cable modems weren't working. Fios wasn't working. Power was out, but the phone lines, with some exceptions, when a telephone pole was completely decimated, it didn't work then. But for most occasions, it worked just fine.
Yeah, and that's credit to the design of the old telephone, the plain old telephone network, which is entirely centrally powered with batteries, and they have their own industrial generators and stuff like that. And it's really neat to like use that and to have that technology. You really take stock of the technology you have when you run out of things like that. I mean, we were marveling over a simple thing like a candle and how many different things it did. Provide a little light for the whole room while you're eating and warm our hands just a little bit,
yeah.
Just enough to get comfortable.
That was cool. And we used a candle that we got at the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris years ago.
Yes.
And it was just sitting there waiting to be used, and we didn't have any other candles. Let's use this, and it lasted for hours.
Yeah, and it's still pretty well full, and we'll use it again and if we need to. And the other interesting, like a wool blanket, that goes a long ways.
That's true.
Wool is incredibly good at insulating, and mm-hmm. as I said, we were getting down to it as far as heat. Comfortable, you know, relatively speaking, but it was really, it was starting to get obnoxious.
You can spend, well, yeah, it was, but you can spend time complaining about various things and compare it to your usual comfort level, but it's pointless to do that.
It's bad for morale.
Yeah, it's bad for morale. It's also, it's not realistic. Most of the world doesn't have what we have.
True.
It's important occasionally to experience what it's like to live without the comforts of home. That's why I don't want to get a generator. You know, I think it's foolish in this area when at most, yeah, a couple of weeks you'll be out of power if a major hurricane hits. I think there should be a way that we can get by without electricity for longer than that. You know,
even a fireplace isn't that great. I mean, you were talking about this. There's all kinds of hazards with that, and smoke. You get carbon monoxide. There's all kinds of maintenance. You have to go out and chop wood, you know, lest you have a heart attack doing that. I mean, there's a lot of things involved with maintaining a fire. And if you don't do that regularly, to switch your priorities and be agile enough to just, you know, check your flu and get everything set up. And then by that time, the fire itself doesn't really radiate in the same way other forms of heat do. So it's sort of and you know, there's so many other things. Heat is part of it, but you also have to be concerned about food and mobility and you know, as we said, communication, stuff like that. So
yeah, being able to survive in adverse conditions using your wits—that's the thing you need to focus on. Not trying to duplicate what you usually have, because you're not going to be able to do that. It's going to be exercise and frustration. You're always going to be worried about refilling the generator or stocking enough wood or whatever.
Right.
And
you need to be huffing gasoline in the middle of an outage.
And it kills people. It really does.
Yes.
We hear these stories every single time this happens. I'm not saying, you know, it's not a bad thing for maybe a little bit of time or for people who really need things, but it's best to know how to survive when things really get kind of minimal.
But what really kept me going, I think we said it at least a couple of times, but we just remind ourselves this is a lot like camping.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Like, hey, you know, we're out in the tundra or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
It is just like camping or like, you know, field studies or you know, any kind of outdoorsy type thing. And you really, if you keep that attitude, you can get through amazing, you know, with a drastic reduction in resources and be happy.
You also discover things like, do you remember the day I discovered that the sun came up at a certain time, and if you stood over by that window, it was really warm.
Yeah.
Even the fact that it was cold outside, if you stood by that window, you felt heat, and we hadn't felt heat like that in so long. It felt like so long.
Well,
so that was an amazing little discovery there. And
That is very, very, very true, and contrary to what people might think, the sun is an incredible source of energy.
Yes. Who doesn't think the sun isn't?
Perhaps talk for another show, but I think there are some sun detractors, people that think it is a conspiracy and whatnot. But we don't have time to get into that.
Yeah, we only have a 45-minute show today. Basketball's coming up at 6:45. Who are we playing? God, did you see what just happened?
Did your chair break?
My chair just collapsed. I'm now 2 feet shorter than I was a second ago. I'm talking up to the microphone. All I was trying to do was see who
reach
was playing
over
today.
Yeah, okay.
What's oh boy.
No, it's right there.
What's
on the wall.
What's today's date? Today is February February the
13th.
Is it the 12th? Yeah, you're right. It's the 12th.
Is it?
Binghamton is visiting us today. If there's anybody from Binghamton listening to the radio now, welcome to Stony Brook. Prepare to get your asses handed to you. But I just wanted to say one other thing about the blackout, about
yes,
the blizzard and all that. What happened right beforehand, you were witness to this.
Yeah.
We saw people lining up at gas stations. This was the stupidest thing ever, but people were remembering what happened during Sandy, which was also stupid, where so many people were hoarding gasoline. In fact, many people who run generators are hoarding gasoline, because how else am I going to keep the generator running 24/7 to maintain my standard
of
living?
My plasma and my blender
can't
my
keep
microwave.
The big screen TV going. It's going to be a disaster. So people are lining up to get gas and to fill their cars up. And I just could not figure this out, because they're basically spending an hour waiting to get gas. And then the next day they're going to be stranded because they're having a blizzard. They can't go anywhere. And then a day or two after that, when things finally do get cleared out, there's no line at the gas stations. What did they accomplish by doing that? It was really silly. It was funny, but it was really silly.
And these are like long lines, like yards, hundreds perhaps.
It wasn't as long as during Sandy, but
No. But I mean, going out into main roads, around, out of the lot of the gas station.
It caused a hazard. It caused a traffic hazard for sure. Anyway, enough about that. We survived. There's still snow everywhere. It was fun. I hope it happens again. It was. I'm glad you could share in some of this because you missed Sandy, but now you got to see Nemo.
Snowy.
Yeah, they're naming blizzards or winter storms now. But only the Weather Channel is naming these storms. So when you call it Nemo, you're basically signing on to whatever it is they're doing. But it's not the National Weather Service doing this. Just so people know,
Nemo. Yeah.
This is really ridiculous. I'm so short now. I've never been this low. I'm actually at table level practically.
Nemo snow.
I'm going to, yeah, it's good. I'm going to try and compose myself. News going on. Hey, they're closing in on that guy in California, the ex-cop who went a little ballistic and started shooting other cops.
Berserk.
He went a little berserk. Let's see what they say about what's going on over there. Police were in a fierce gunfight with a fugitive ex-LAPD cop suspected of killing three and declaring war on the force, with the wanted man holed up on the force, police force.
Sorry.
With the wanted man holed up in a cabin in the San Bernardino Mountains. He's been on a bit of a rampage for the last few days and hiding pretty well in addition. But have you been seeing what's been going on with this? Basically, he's declared war on any cop anywhere. So the cops have been reacting with the usual hysteria that you expect from cops whenever they feel that one of their own is in danger because they're so much better than anybody else and it doesn't matter who gets in the way. So what happened was they had a description of his truck, a blue truck of some sort. These genius cops saw a blue truck pull into a housing development and they opened fire on the blue truck. They didn't even stop the truck. They didn't identify themselves. They didn't put on their lights. They just opened fire, shot two women who were delivering newspapers early in the morning. Oh, it gets better. Another cop heard the gunfire and went racing to investigate what was going on, saw another blue truck, opened fire on that blue truck, missing the guy driving that one. And, you know, how are these not criminal acts? Just opening fire because something looks like something you're looking for. You know, these guys should not be cops. And the fact that it happens so often tells you how many people shouldn't be cops. Cops need to have training. They need to be able to take a bullet before they send a bullet. Sounds callous, I know, but that's why we call them brave, because they do things like this. Not panic, not fire 40 shots into one person because he might have a knife or something stupid like that. Now, this guy, yeah, this guy's a threat. This guy is kind of off his rocker. But that's no reason to put everybody else in danger because you feel threatened. And I'd like to say hopefully this will end peacefully, but it doesn't look like it's going to. And I'm sure by the end of the night we'll hear how it concludes. But it's been an interesting story to follow, right?
Do you think they'll get the same color trucks when the police replace them?
You mean, are the police even going to replace them?
Yeah, they promised they would.
They're going to replace the truck. How about the medical bills? How about all the other stuff these people have to deal with?
No.
I don't know. It's wrong. It's just wrong to do that. It also shows you how everybody is human. You know, I'm not faulting people for being human, but it shows that you can give people all the armaments you want. It doesn't make them into super beings. They're all going to make mistakes. This guy, this Dorner guy, he's made some pretty big mistakes as far as firing on cops or other people basically having an agenda and flipping out. And the cops are flipping out in their way as well. And anybody, whether they're in a position of authority or not, is capable of flipping out. So that's something we seem to forget. A lot of us seem to think, it can never happen to me. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm never going to react unreasonably or anything like that. But here we are. We're seeing it yet again.
Well, he wasn't making that many mistakes up until this point in eluding them.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what happened. He was in Big Bear.
Where was the thermal imaging? You'd think they'd see him running around in the snow, freaking out with all his guns.
Well, maybe he wasn't running around in the snow. Maybe he was sleeping in a basement somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they said that this neighborhood was only 10% occupancy rate because it's wintertime now.
Right.
So he could have had a nice time in a cabin. Probably rearmed himself because all those cabins probably have full armaments of guns, too. He could have, set up quite a nice little encampment for himself.
Do you think they're really going to let him surrender?
I doubt it. I really doubt it. In fact, they have asked or translation commanded local media to stop broadcasting the images of where he's holed up.
Yeah.
So there'll be no evidence of what happens. Or maybe there will be. I don't know. I don't want to sound too cynical, but it won't be live, whatever happens.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I guess that does make a bit of sense. But
To protect them, just in case he's watching TV and eating Doritos and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, what else is going on in the world? This is interesting. This is local. This is going to get big. I hope this gets big. But right out here in Mount Sinai, which is very close to where we are right now, they are proposing to build a mosque. Proposed mosque in Mount Sinai. Imagine that. I read about this in the paper yesterday. There was a hearing on Monday. How'd they have a hearing on Monday with all the snow on the ground? They managed to do that anyway. And all these people turned out to oppose it. Because why? They're concerned about traffic. They're concerned about congestion. They're concerned about all kinds of things that could happen as a result of this. And I just, you know, I ask myself, when was the last time you saw this number of people turn out to oppose a church or a synagogue or anything like that? You don't see that. You don't see it. Only mosques.
No.
They're the only ones that have these traffic concerns and all kinds of other worries. No one's ever going to come out and say, we don't want any Muslims around here, or we think that Muslims are terrorists or things like that. No, they won't say that publicly. They'll say it privately for sure. But
How many people come out and say, I'm a racist?
Well, actually, there are some people that do say that, but yeah.
Other than Dave Chappelle.
Well, that's
but that's a
well.
Skit. So, no.
What I'm trying to do, if our internet will cooperate, which it's not doing right now, I'd like to go to the story. There it goes. Finally, proposed mosque stirs debate in Mount Sinai on Newsday, and what I'd like to do, just to prove my point,
so crazy,
is to look at the comments. The comments that people post, and then you'll see the true.
And this is the Newsday story, or what is this?
Yeah, proposed mosque spurs debate in Mount Sinai. 6,500 square foot mosque would be on a 3.44 acre property.
That's modest.
And basically, at a meeting held by the Mount Sinai Civic Association. Nearby residents spoke of concerns about traffic and congestion. People did not want to see anything change, I'll bet. The Civic Association believes the proposal is permitted under current zoning, but the group has concerns about parking. The only thing that the Civic Association takes note of and has written a letter about already, we want to make sure that all zoning codes are followed and that there is an appropriate number of parking spaces. We want to make sure whatever traffic concerns are addressed to make sure it doesn't present a problem. That actually sounds quite reasonable. Mosque would accommodate up to 150 people, 52 parking spaces.
Whoa.
Exit and entrance would be on Mount Sinai Quorum Road. The level of service in that road is more than adequate to support the mosque. And the congregation will welcome visitors who are curious about the mosque. This is an open mosque. Anyone can come and visit. Services are held in English, and men and women permitted to pray together in the same room. For the lack of a better term, this is a more moderate branch of Islam. Community concerns were inevitable in any new development. I sort of think that this is going to be different.
Okay.
So let me read some comments.
Just the occupancy, 150 people. You think maybe that's tiny, right?
It's not that
how
much.
How many millions and billions? 2 billion? How many Muslims are there in the world?
Well, they're not all going to come to the
right, but saying is like the amount of diplomacy we could do locally, maybe like get to know these, you know, neighbors that are practicing their religion, maybe welcome them, sort of spread some goodwill.
Yeah.
You know, 150 people.
Imagine that. Yeah.
Go on.
If the parking concerns, deal with the parking concerns. There's always parking concerns. I know that. But this is an opportunity to do something different.
I'm sure they share in
your enthusiasm there. Excuse me. Let me read some comments on the Newsday site. And you say people don't say they're racist. Well, here people do say they're racist.
Okay.
Okay, I'm looking at these for the first time. And I won't read the same person's comments.
Okay.
If someone writes two comments, I won't read both of them.
Sure, sure.
Here's one from someone named Steakum.
Okay.
Since 9/11, Muslims have committed 20,265 terror attacks. That's a lot of dead people at the hands of the religion of peace. You would think those so-called moderate Muslims would be up in arms condemning that tiny little percent of extremist Muslims, yet they never seem to say a thing. And when they think you're not looking, they celebrate death. That's an enlightened person there.
It seems like a bit of a generalization, but okay, go on.
Don't choke on your steakums there. That's all I got to say. This from Chris and Jean. How did this person amass 3.44 acres of land in an area where land is not cheap? Well, gee, how could somebody do that? How could somebody amass land in a place where land is not cheap? Maybe they paid for it. Maybe they have money to pay for it. Maybe they inherited it. Who knows?
Right.
You ask this question every time you see something that's a little bigger than whatever shack you live in? Come on already.
How does Walmart do what they do, right? There's plenty of huge entities that buy land.
Okay, this is from WVS Sweeney. This comment has been removed because it violates Newsday.com's terms of service. You can imagine what their terms of service, if they don't remove other things, but they remove this, what it could have been. Okay, let's see. This actually is a funny post. It's actually pretty funny that it's to be built in one of the least culturally and ethically diverse areas on Long Island. I'm sure folks in the Mount Sinai / Miller Place area are all crossing their fingers it doesn't happen. It will be fun to watch how this one turns out. I agree. I mean, not necessarily agree about it being culturally and ethically not diverse. I think you can be surprised by the people that are the hidden gems that are in there. And I hope they come out now. I hope they express themselves and aren't intimidated by the ignorance that's bound to come out.
Definitely.
Another comment removed. Okay, here's a comment from Hambone. Why is everything meat-based? All these people's names. Steakum, Meatbone, or Hambone. Hambone asked one question. Where is the money to build this mosque coming from?
Wait, didn't somebody else ask that?
Yeah, they seem to be suspicious about this. Okay, here's something from Knight Captain 123. I, too, am a strict believer in the Constitution. I support their right of religious freedom. Their right, yes, those people.
That being said,
why don't we hear from the Muslim community denouncing acts like what occurred in Benghazi and elsewhere? Are there really any moderate Muslims? If so, where are they? And why don't they actively work against the radical Muslims? Hey, you know, you ever hear about those car bombs taking place in places like Pakistan and Afghanistan? Most of the time, people being killed are Muslims, fellow Muslims, ones they don't agree with, ones that speak out against the Taliban and that kind of a thing. So, I would say don't show your ignorance, but you probably have nothing else to show. Continuing here, also remember one thing. Their name does not mean peace, as was once thought. It means submission. And if you ask a Muslim what the Quran means when it says that they are to convert non-believers to Islam by the book. Oh, wait, I have to show more because he goes on. Hold on. By the book or by the sword, see how they reply. Yeah, okay. And someone, Overhead 12345, great names here, responded to that saying, thank you, awesome post. Let's see. This person, BBST1, says, rather have a mosque on my block than some other kind of temple. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by that. That might be anti-Semitism, who knows. Someone else goes into the fact that all these religious houses should be taxed, which is another issue. Well, okay. You get the idea. You get the idea. So that's the kind of thought that you'll see whenever you open up a chat board. Even when people have to register, you'll see this kind of sentiment. And that's what's out there. That's what the fight ahead. I really hope this gets built. I'm not really into religious houses. I mean, I like them. I think oftentimes the architecture is great. It's nice to bring people together for various things. I think this could be a very good educational tool. There aren't many mosques around, and there should be. There should be a bunch.
How many moderate Christians go after radical Christians?
Yeah.
That's
an idea.
Ask I'm that really question. Not seeing that. They're all over the radio. I mean, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go on.
That's all I have to say about the mosque. But we have a State of the Union address coming up later on tonight, 9:00.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be on this radio station, but you can listen to it in other places, and you can watch it on TV and read about it in the paper. What would you like Obama to say? What would you like him to address?
Whatever he wants.
Well, maybe messages will be passed along to him before he gives a speech, which is completely spontaneous. No one knows what he's going to say, even though they're reporting exactly what he's going to say.
Okay,
I don't know
what the
point of it is. But, you know, an issue that you think should be addressed. What's the most important issue? Anything?
We don't have time for that. Whatever. There's a lot of things that need to be addressed.
Not one? No? Okay. Well, I would hope that he'd say things about global warming. That would be certainly nice if he actually addressed that issue. He's already spoken about gay marriage, so I hope he continues to say good things about that. Gun control, you know, let's be strong about that. And maybe address the drone issue. The drone issue is something that I think a lot of people are bugged by. We were talking about that earlier today, and Obama is becoming known as the drone president, not because he is a drone, but because he supports the drone program, which was started under Bush. And we were kind of throwing this around. What would happen if Obama discontinued the drone program? We'd love it. We'd love the fact that people can't be targeted in foreign countries, even American citizens, by these drones. But if he were to do that, with 83% of the American public supporting that program, what do you think would happen to him? And you raised a very good point that he is a politician, and that's what politicians have to look at.
Yeah, I did.
So,
By the way, the Seattle Police Department dropped their drone program.
Oh, you ruined my surprise. I have a list here.
That's my surprise.
I have a list here of all the places that have drone programs in the United States. And yes, I was going to kid you a little bit over this, because Washington has a bunch of them. Well, not a bunch, but they had Seattle Police Department. They had they might still have Washington State Department of Transportation, and they had one other too. But yes, Seattle Police. The King County Sheriff's Office in Washington, they have it too. But Seattle Police.
They
last
have good
week,
reason though.
What reason?
That's like the bomb squad and SWAT.
Aren't there bombs everywhere? I mean, doesn't everybody have a SWAT team? Do we all need drones near?
I don't know. I mean, the Sheriff's Department handles, like, special operations kind of stuff. And, like, I don't know. I think there's more crossover with, like, you know, National Guard and military stuff with the Sheriff's Department, because they coordinate, like, big efforts, like, regionally. Whereas the Seattle Police Department, it's like, come on, you're a municipality, like a city police department. It's not as big or wide-ranging issues that you'd be in charge of, like, coordinating. The other one was what I think you're about to mention, the Washington State Department of Transportation.
Yes.
Which I think is really actually a useful use. I would argue maybe, like, other organizations like that that do things in remote areas and stuff like that. But definitely WashDOT, like, tankers spills over and it's, you know, fluorine or some horrible, terrible gas or something or liquid. I mean, you want to see it without getting your hazmat guys completely saturated or a reactor, some kind of nuclear disaster. I mean, not or transport of, you know, a radioactive material. So anything like that, I think the Washington Department of Transportation would have an interest in having an eye in the sky, as it were.
Well, the state of New York does not apparently have such an interest, as I couldn't find anything in New York involving drones. I'd like to experiment with drones, but I don't like authorities doing things with drones, not unless we get equal access to them. There are some weird ones here, though, like Eastern Gateway Community College. What in the world do they need drones for? I'd like to know about that. How about New Mexico State University Physical Science Laboratory? It's not the university. It's just that laboratory that has drones. I guess they're experimenting with them or something. NASA has drones. Mississippi Department of Marine Resources. So I guess, you know, these might be good uses for these drones. But, this list was obtained and put on the Internet, and 81 different entities, including the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Army, all of that. They all have...
So now it's 80, right?
I guess without Seattle, yeah, there's only 80 left. So that's that.
Let's be accurate.
Yeah. So drones, what would you do with a drone if you just get a drone? I would use it just to fly around and take nice pictures and explore things. And
I've seen them. I mean, I've been to many, like, hacker events and different you know, events, just, yeah, meetings and things like that, hackerspaces, people working on their own drones, building small drones, very large drones. I've seen all... And basically, before they were just blanket called drones, it was quadricopters. That was, like, the big thing people would hobby with. And I actually have some old RC planes and controllers. I could actually build my own quadricopter and get into it myself. So, I mean, it's really accessible. I mean, kids, you know, I'm sure in schools with robotics clubs and stuff are going to play with them. So, I don't know. Drones has this, like, kind of military feel. And really, I mean, it's no different than, like, a RC helicopter or RC car or plane, you know, that kind of stuff. So... Yeah, anybody could hobby with them, and I don't know what I'd use it for. I like your idea of pictures, mm-hmm. but different kind of things. I don't know. I like audiovisual stuff too, so maybe a microphone if you want to listen to different things.
It's good for establishing shots.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, let's say we wanted to make a film or something about, oh, I don't know, Trenton, New Jersey. Well, you could go to Trenton and take a picture of that city, or you could go up in the air and take a picture from there of and just get a nice shot that way.
That could
get crowded if everybody did that.
I would like to have a swarm of rogue drones that live in the woods and come in like ravens and crows. They like come in from the woods and then like hijack other drones and then like bring them into the fold, and then the swarm gets larger, and then they go and jam other signals and other drone stuff, and then the swarm like then.
Wow, you have this all written out too. You have plans, you have diagrams, you've got it all figured out, Kyle. Wow.
Anyway,
we have to continue this conversation.
But then you could like computer control them and have them be autonomous and have them like program, run macros and have them do like different things independently at different times, maybe like weather based or event based. So you wouldn't even have to really control them. They would just be independent. Maybe tie them into like a backend like Google Maps or something, and like
wow,
get some wild stuff to where like all you do is like fill out a form, or like some event happens in the news because it's being crawled, and then that sends signals to your swarm, and then. Anyway,
we have interesting times ahead of us. I look forward to this, and I do want to get drones and play with them. I don't think the quadricopters are on the same level as these, because anyone can just build one of those.
Right. No,
these
no.
are things that cities and entities of various sorts are.
I'm just saying that's a really accessible way to get into it. A quadricopter is a form of drone, but there are drones the size of small planes or half a plane, like. Practically the size you could get in. I mean, the X-37B is a small space shuttle. That's a drone of sorts.
We are out of time. I'm sorry. I don't know how the time went so fast, but we have a basketball game coming up in 2 minutes. So we're going to go out with this piece called Snow by Chemical Brothers, which I'm sure will remind everybody of snow.
The snow.
Yeah. We're going to go out and play in the snow now, and we will see you next week again for, I think, a full hour. Meanwhile, stay tuned for the Stony Brook Seawolves kicking the crap out of whatever the Binghamton team is called. And we'll be watching State of the Union later on, talking about that next week. Have a good night.
Listening to WUSB Stony Brook. And coming up, we will have the Stony Brook Seawolves men's basketball team taking on the Binghamton Bearcats. So let's send it down to Pritchard Gymnasium with Mike Solano, Kurt Hilton, and Jeff Bernstein.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome once again to Stony Brook University men's basketball here on WUSB, where the Seawolves tonight try to fight their way back into first place in the America East standings. Along with Kurt Hilton and Jeff Bernstein, I'm Mike Solano. The Seawolves coming off a loss the other night on the road at Hartford, traveling through the aftermath of the blizzard that hit over the weekend, coming up short against the Hartford Hawks. Now back at home, though, guys, after a stretch which saw the Seawolves play 13 of 18 on the road. They've got three straight home games now to try and make their mark at the tail end of this America East season, as we're now officially in the home stretch.
Absolutely, and, you know, I got to say it. It was like a Disney movie. Seawolves, unfortunately, did find Nemo. Nemo found them, too. and I think it wrought a little havoc with them in terms of their arrival. Anytime that you depart one juncture at 8 o'clock and arrive at 2 o'clock for a 3 o'clock game, you tell me any country, you tell me any coach in the country who's the opposition and says that's what a team had to, you know, deal with on the road, oh, I'll take that matchup anytime.
Yeah, you know, before we get into it, I don't want to take away from tonight's game, but the way Hartford handled over the weekend, Bush League at best, dangerous at worst to make the Seawolves travel in those conditions, considering they had to go through impassable roads, overturned cars on I-95, and considering that other games in the area were postponed until Monday, some still haven't been made up yet. Kind of silly the way that it was forced upon the Seawolves staff to travel for that game. However, the Seawolves did have a 9-point lead in that game, and Hartford had
Absolutely.
One of those shooting performances, started nailing threes in the second half. So the win certainly does belong to the Hartford Hawks, the basketball team, and the Seawolves have to turn things around today against a familiar opponent in SUNY Binghamton.
Yeah, I'm just happy that we're all together. It's been a while since we've all three of us been there.
What you guys look like.
We survived Nemo, but it's good to see all of us back in the mix. The other thing, too,
don't,
just a couple thoughts.
Don't say back. Because mine's hurting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're all backs are all definitely hurting. But a couple things I just wanted to get off my chest about the Hartford situation, and then we turn the page. I totally agree with Mike. Game should have never been played. I felt this is the second thing, too, is I think the American East Conference didn't do their diligence in just taking charge and making a decision instead of leaving it up to the two teams to fight it out.
Yeah.
And the third thing is the Hartford-Stony Brook relationship wasn't the best as it all it wasn't the best as it was down the road anyway, so now you just really made it really bad. And I think the conference really didn't step up in terms of really just saying, okay, we'll take the ball, we'll make the decision, and keep both teams out of it.
Yeah.
Coaches got involved. Coaches from the women's team in Hartford got involved, you know, because the women were here, too. The women's team was here for 2 days. So I just think the league, you know, really didn't step up in that situation.
If, and I'll let Mike get to his pregame, but if, my thoughts on it are if you're the governing body, then govern. You know, if they've got to play the game earlier, later, whatever it is. But to make a team board one bus to take him 15 minutes down to the ferry, you board the ferry on foot, there's another bus on the other side waiting to pick you up, and then that bus kind of breaks, you know, gets into a ditch. You got administrators digging the bus out or helping to dig the bus out. Then they encounter an unfortunate and potentially tragic car wreck that delayed them further. And so now you get to a game within an hour of tip-off. Actually, they got there. It was supposed to be a 2 o'clock game, and they had to push it back to 3 because the Seawolves didn't arrive at 3. Then you're upsetting the competitive balance. That's not the way it's supposed to be. Playing on the road's tough enough, and I'm not making excuses for the Seawolves, you know, at all, because Hartford played well and outplayed them and won the ball game. But in terms of the peripheral stuff, that stuff shouldn't happen.
Well, it was a tough weekend, certainly, for those on Long Island. Sports are no digging out of the snow and the after effects. Fortunately, State handled this one a little bit better than they did the hurricane. Everybody's pretty much dug out by now. Kurt, if you were able to get here, I think everybody's all
Look,
right.
I mean,
you were,
town of
you were buried.
Town of Brookhaven took a beating. I got home on Friday after a four-hour trip in what takes me 20 minutes. I got stuck on the road in an SUV with four-wheel drive 3 times and a fourth time outside my house. It was an ordeal, and I can't imagine folks who had it tougher than me. I mean, there were people in their cars for 18, 24 hours. Brutal, brutal.
I tell you what, I thought it was really bad, and I got a four-wheel drive myself, and then I went into Kurt's neighborhood, and it was like I got out of the car and said, they haven't even think that anybody exists out here. I mean, it was bad. I mean, if anyone had a car, you know, they're suicide watch.
Thought I had an Alaska zip code.
Yeah, it was bad.
Well, Binghamton fortunately able to get down here safely with no issue, and the Bearcats in town tonight for this matchup of in-state rivals as the Seawolves, despite the loss on Sunday afternoon, have been playing well of late. They've won 4 out of 5 and 9 out of 11. They have the best overall winning percentage in the American East, 17-6 and an 8-2 in the conference, sit a half game behind the Vermont Catamounts for first place. They are tied in the loss column, and Vermont playing tonight as well, tipping off at 7 o'clock, home against the outgoing Boston University. So we'll keep an eye on that one throughout the evening with Andy back in the studio as well. Right now, let's get to the comments from the head coach of the Seawolves, Steve Peichel. He sat down with Jeff Bernstein to discuss tonight's matchup.
Well, Moments before tonight's game between Stony Brook and Binghamton, we're talking to the head men's basketball coach, Steve Peichel, and coach, just some final thoughts on the game at Hartford.
Glad to be home. A lot of road games in a short period of time, and didn't play our best basketball against Hartford, as evident, you know, by the final score, but, you know, still had chances to win the game. I thought by far our poorest performance of the year, but still had chances to win the game. So hopefully we bounce back tonight. It's nice to have a three-game home stretch here. Haven't been home in a long, long time, and we still got a certain, six-game season here that we control our own destiny. So it starts tonight, and playing a dangerous Binghamton team who has nothing to lose coming into our gym. So you always fear these kind of games, and hopefully our guys will play good basketball. We've had a good practice leading up to this, and hopefully we'll get back to playing good first-place basketball.
Coach, some of these times you never expect, especially these natural disasters that happen. Some thoughts, as you recollect, obviously, the whole trip, the whole excursion going back there, the day of the game and playing the game. I know it was a tough loss, but just some overall thoughts just about that whole experience.
Well, just real thankful that the plows came down my street yesterday. So thankful for that. I've been walking here to work in the snow for a while now. So I'm thankful for that. And, we've had Storm Sandy, and we now had, the blizzard of the century here in Long Island, 30 inches of snow, obstacles. And we try to overcome them, and obstacles in your personal life and in your basketball and professional life too. So hopefully this will make us stronger and tougher. And, next time we play University of Hartford, I know we're going to play a lot better than we played that time. So we've overcome a lot, and we got another six games to overcome even more. And, like I say this all the time to our guys, everyone is playing their best basketball against us. It's the way it is now. We're the team in the league that everyone wants to beat. So every time we go on the road at their gyms, they're playing their best basketball. And, that's what it takes. We got to play our best basketball, too, home or away.
Just turning the page on Hartford, just some thoughts when I say home, sweet home.
Yeah, it's good. We've been on the road so much this season that it's not just been in league play. Five out of our last six were on the road in conference games. So, it's been all year on the road, on the road, on the road. We play better here. Our fans show up. It's awesome. The community has been great. And now, finally, our students. This will be the first game back for our students who've been away on break themselves for the holidays. So, it'll be great to play in our own gym, and we have four more home games here. Hopefully we pack the place for all four. The community comes out, our students come out, because this team deserves a great, great turnout at each of the last four games.
And we talked, in the beginning, you were a little cautious about Binghamton, and as seen throughout a lot of conferences, it doesn't really matter. The top team could beat the bottom team in the conference, and the bottom team sometimes beats the top team, so you have to be ready on any given night.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. It's college basketball. You see it more and more this year than ever, but you saw it last year too. People just don't pay attention. Any team could be any team on any given night, and you got to play good basketball. And Binghamton is going to play great basketball today. I've watched all their tapes. I feel I have a good feel for them. They will play their best game tonight, no doubt about it. And, we're going to have to play real well. So, you always worry home or away, no matter who you're playing. You got to play good basketball. You got to play good basketball to win. You got to play good basketball to win a championship. And then you got to go to the tournament and play good basketball to win another championship. So, we got our work cut out for us. And tonight will be a huge challenge. Jimmy Gray's a real good point guard. And they have a rookie of the year candidate in Reed, who's the leading scorer and rebounder as a freshman in the conference. So, certainly have some really good quality players.
X's and O's wise, what's some of the concerns about the Bearcats?
You really worry. Coach Dempsey, a real good coach. He's won a lot of games, very successful at Ryder. They play all zone, so very different than the teams we've just played the last three or four games. Again, they have a point guard who's dangerous. Whenever you have a great point guard, he leads them in every category. He's going to all-time leader in steals for the school history. And then you have a dangerous freshman who's capable of getting 30 points on any given night. And they got some role guys who can really shoot the ball. So they worry me in a lot of areas. We got to play Stony Brook basketball, intense, great defense. We got to start cracking people on the boards. We're a good rebounding team and haven't been lately. Hopefully we'll get back to some old-fashioned Stony Brook basketball tonight.
It's very ironic you say Stony Brook basketball. I was going to ask you, you know, based on the tough loss at Hartford, what are your concerns going into this game?
Yeah, I mean, I just want us to get back to flying around the backboards, really dominating people on both ends of the floor. I want us to run, and, you know, I want consistency out of my real good players. And effort-wise and execution-wise and all that. And we're down 6 games. So we want to leave it on the floor. Hopefully you'll see a good energy tonight. I'm going to use my bench quite a bit. And we're going to play with a good energy and a good passion tonight.
Coach, best of luck tonight.
Thank you.
And there's the head coach of the Seawolves, Steve Peichel, just a couple minutes away from the starting lineups and the national anthem here at Pritchard Gymnasium as the Seawolves and Binghamton get set to cap their regular season series. First meeting of the year between these two teams was a laugh, or at least it was in the second half. Teams took a few minutes to get going, but the Seawolves showed their talent and their superiority, winning 62-37, had a 30-point lead late in the second half of that one. And you heard Coach Peichel talking about stud freshman Jordan Reed. Really, he and Jameel Warney locked in a close contest for freshman of the year in the America East. Seawolves defense did a good job on Reed first time out, holding him to just 7 points. But meanwhile, the other end of the spectrum, another guy you heard Coach mention, Jimmy Gray, great story there in his senior season, a walk-on as a freshman, will be playing in his 110th game tonight for Binghamton. That's fifth all-time for the Bearcats. He averages 10 points a contest, and as you heard Coach mention, a real pickpocket with 36 steals on the season. So youth and experience for this Binghamton team, but Kurt, the Seawolves have very much the same with Warney and guys like Tommy Brenton and their junior backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I think Coach Dempsey's done a terrific job with Binghamton. I mean, there was one game that the Seawolves were televised where you got a chance to watch him during the halftime as they had pulled off a great win up at Maine. Now, always a very, very difficult road trip for a lot of the teams in the league that are further downstate. As Steve Peichel said, they're going to play hard. They're going to come out with maximum effort, and Jimmy Gray is that guy. I mean, here's a guy whose career was born in the throes of the Binghamton debacle, and now a guy who walked on 4 years later is in his 110th game. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And he plays hard every single night. If you pay to see Jimmy Gray play, you get your money's worth.
By the way, just for the stats, if you keep scoring at home, the capacity today at Pritchard has increased. They've added some seating in the end zone.
Yep. We'll describe that when we come back.
With the singing of our national anthem, being performed tonight by Stony Brook University's own Emily Resnick.
Tonight for the Seawolves faithful as they get set to watch their team in action for the first time since January the 26th. So it's been a couple of weeks since the Seawolves played here within their home confines as they get set to take on Binghamton, a team which has lost 17 of its last 18 games, coming in just 3-21 overall on the season, 1-10 in the America East, currently occupying the last place position, which would be the eighth seed this year in an eight-team tournament. Let's take a look at the starting lineups first for the Binghamton Bearcats. In their backcourt, Jimmy Gray running the point. He is a six-foot senior from Binghamton. Walk-on, as we mentioned, playing his 110th game tonight for the Bearcats. He's joined in the backcourt by senior guard Mike Horn out of Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey. And then at the swing position, Jordan Reed, the star freshman, averaging 16 points per game, 8.8 rebounds per contest. As we mentioned, the Seawolves able to hold him quiet first time out, something that most teams have been unable to do this season. Up front is 6'6", Harlem native Javon Rawling, and junior from Clinton, Maryland, the 6'8", 225-pound Brian Freeman. For the Seawolves, a change to the starting lineup tonight for Steve Peichel. The coach not happy with the team's effort against Hartford. Also a little strategy involved, placing Scott King into the starting rotation for the first time this season, taking the place of Eric McAllister, who had just a 1.3 rebound performance against Hartford the other day, 0-for-4 from the floor. So it'll be King getting the start at the four position for the Seawolves tonight. The backcourt is, as usual, with Anthony Jackson and Dave Coley. Coley averaging 11.5 points per game. Jackson right about that mark as well, 11.4 points per contest. Jamil Warney is the man in the middle, the leading scorer on the team with 12 points a contest, averaging 7.7 rebounds a game as well. And Mr. Do-It-All Tommy Brenton, 8.7 points, 8 rebounds per contest, 110 assists on the year for the senior from Columbia, Maryland.
Now, a big part of that lineup change, as you mentioned, Mike, is tactical in terms of their game. Scott King is a shooter, and because, as he mentioned during his pregame with Jeff, Steve Peichel talked about Binghamton plays exclusively, almost exclusively, zone. There are a few plays, as I was watching film, that specifically they're trying to run. When you look at baseline out-of-bounds plays, look for Scott King to be lurking on either baseline. One of the things that Binghamton does is they really compact their zone down, trying to take away the quick hitters. We've seen lobs from out-of-bounds for dunks, that sort of thing. They really do a great job of taking that away. But in basketball, you can't protect everything. You protect the inside, then you leave it at the expense of the outside. So Scott King is going to be firing. Now, it's not a demotion for Eric McAllister per se, but guess what? You know Steve Peichel, how he rolls. Scott King comes out today and gets 10, 15 points. He ain't going out of that lineup.
You know, with the Hartford loss, I'll tell you what, Jamil Warney had a phenomenal game for Stony, but played really, really incredible. And look for another big one from Jamil tonight.
Career high 21 points Sunday afternoon for Warney as King gets set to jump things off here for the Seawolves as the ball is in the air. It is tipped back by Brian Freeman, and Binghamton wins the opening tip. Here's Jimmy Gray coming across the line with Binghamton wearing their road greens, white letters and numbers and white trim going from left to right. Ball down low along the baseline. Warney gets an early block in this game as Reed tried to turn one around from the baseline. The other way it comes with Coley running smack into Mike Horn. Oh, I beg your pardon, that was Gray taking the bump, and he'll also take the personal foul.
How about the hustle by Jamil Warney? Blocks the shot. Looks like he swatted it out of bounds. He runs over to the VIP row, dives into the seats to save that and keep it alive.
Tommy Brenton inbounds Anthony Jackson. Quick straight on three. Good. And the Seawolves jump in front 3-0, 21 seconds into the game. There's one of those set out of bounds plays you mentioned,
Kirk. And there you go. They compact it inside, so it comes out to the top of the circle. And AJ just gets it and strokes it. Big topic of the film discussion today.
Top of the arc with it for Binghamton is Rawling. Gets a screen from Freeman. Hands off to Gray on the right side, right in front of the Seawolves coaching staff. Gray angles in for the right, kicks it out. Freeman there with it, 14 to shoot. Back to the outside, and around left side it comes for Reed. Reed puts the dribble between his legs, bounces one along the wing, driving in with it, putting up the shot, Rawling, and it gets the friendly roll off the front of the rim.
Well, Jamil Warney should get the two. Instead, it'll be Rawling that gets the credit for it because it was actually Warney who tipped it in.
And here's Jackson the other way for the Seawolves. Stony Brook wearing the home whites. Red numbers and letters trimmed in gray. Red, gray, and white trimmed down the shorts. going from right to left. Scott King on the outside for the Seawolves. Dishes off Brenton. Hard cross-court pass Coley in the left corner. Back to the top. Jackson will try another three. This time off to the left. No good. Reed underneath grabs the rebound. Minute and a half gone by here at the onset. 3-2. Seawolves leading Binghamton. Last meeting of the season between these two teams, at least in the regular season. Reed tries a three that comes up short. Brenton there for the loose ball. Over to King. He'll try a three. Left side, too strong. Long rebound comes out to Freeman. Off his hands, right to Warney. Warney dishes it across the paint. Coley steps back. Fadeaway jumper. Good from 12.
I tell you, Stony Brook's going to get their shots today. Binghamton's going to play the zone. They like playing the zone. That's the Dempsey mode. Zone defense. So the Seawolves get that extra pass. They'll get a good shot today.
Dave Coley at time getting the rebound underneath the basket rather than going right up with it in traffic, backpedals his way out and nails a fall-away shot.
And how many bigs do you see force that up in that double team? Warney, the presence of mind to find Coley and get him open.
Reed over on the far side, left side of the floor to Rawling, spins his way in along the baseline against King, lost the handle on it, and it's tied up. Foul called against the Seawolves, and that's going against King as he got a hand in there to knock that ball away.
Remember, we're now into the second half of the America East. Binghamton's got nothing to lose. Remember, this time last year, Binghamton knocked off Vermont, okay, at the end of the season. So Binghamton's playing loose here in the second half.
That was a game that all but handed the regular season title to the Seawolves. Binghamton 0-26 going into that one and knocked off Vermont 57-53.
How do you
first free throw
that?
Made by Rawling.
How do you explain that?
College basketball.
College basketball, exactly. Incidentally, they've got Vermont again, second to last game of the season in Vestal, February 28th. The Seawolves will be in Boston that night. Rawling misses the back end. 5-3 Stony Brook, 2.5 played. Brenton lost the handle on it. Horn got it, and a push foul called on Tommy Brenton trying to get back on defense. That's the first on Brenton and the second called against Stony Brook. We'll talk about the dramatic wins. Binghamton there, one win in the last 18 came on a Jimmy Gray three-pointer. Here's Rawling from the left corner knocking down a long two to tie the game at five. A three came with 2 seconds left, and had that not gone down, Maine would have won that game, and it'd be looking at an 18-game losing streak for Binghamton. As it stands, they've lost their last five. There's Coley on the right side, launches a three, no good, along the far baseline. It's tracked down by Freeman, gets it into the hands of Gray, streaks down the floor, finds Horn down the court on the right wing. He'll back it out to Reed. Reed with Brenton looking him in the eye, passes over to the left side, taken there by Rawling. Bounces for Horn, near sideline, along to Reed in the corner. Back up top of the arc, Gray tries the three, hits it, and it's an 8-5 lead for Binghamton with 16.5 to play here in half number one.
And that was not an easy shot, but Jimmy Gray, he will take that. He's smart, he's gutsy, and he knows.
Gray at 29% for the season from beyond the arc as Warney spins in on the pass from Coley and a foul called on the floor. Warney never got the shot up. And a foul going against Binghamton is on Freeman. That's number one on him as Karan Walker checks into the game for Binghamton, replacing Mike Horn, and Eric McAllister into the game for Stony Brook with King coming to the bench. There's Jackson, left side, over to McAllister, back for Jackson, around to the right for Coley. Coley on the outside of the arc to the top for Jackson. Back around, left wing, McAllister up top. Jackson into Warney, back outside, guards play catch with it. Now into Brenton, left side of the lane, finds the cutting Coley, goes up high off the glass, no. Offensive follow by Tommy Brenton.
Well, you saw what the Seawolves did, worked it around the perimeter very patiently, then they got it to the high post.